to challenge the system, to fight for justice, and particularly at this time of pandemic, you know, and in the middle of winter, people should not be turned out of their homes, and our tax dollars should not be going to that process. I saw that one of the tweets was asking Mayor Wheeler, you know, how much are you spending on this to evict a Black and Indigenous family from their home at this time? And I think that's really, I would like to see how much they're spending on this, you know.
And indeed, and the irony of charging someone for wire fraud when these banksters were committing massive amounts of fraud in transferring funds electronically through these devious systems that the house in question, the Red House, is itself caught up in. But that's about all we can talk about today. Thanks a lot, Jackie, for joining us in the conversation.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, and that's it. Bye-bye, everybody.
Hold your head up, lift the top of your mind, put your eyes on the earth, lift your heart to your own home planet. What do you see? What is your attitude? Are you here to improve or damn it? Look right now, and you will see we're only here by the skin of...
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, and K282BH Philomath at 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River at 91.9 FM. On the web, you can listen to us at kboo.fm. The time is 9 a.m.
December 9th.
I wish they would do something about getting people off the streets.
I'm not giving up, and I don't want nobody to feel sorry for me.
The 22nd Annual Homelessness Marathon will air on Wednesday, December 9th, right here on this radio station.
Welcome to Inside Washington County with Rob Solomon. We feature interviews with leaders in the community focusing on issues important to Washington County.
Today, our show was taped during the volatile COVID-19 pandemic. With our studio unavailable to us and our commitment to social distancing, we are using the Zoom platform to record today's show.
Welcome to Inside Washington County. I'm Rob Solomon. Today, we are pleased to continue part two of our discussion about racism in Washington County. Our guest host is community activist Hector Hinosa, and our guests are Waji Saeed, Muslim Education Center Director, J.W. Matt Hennessy, Vancouver Avenue Baptist Church Reverend, and Dr. White Bear, Assistant Director, Diversity and Cultural Issues at Oregon State University.
So, Dr. White Bear, take on the next question. What can our community do to gain political influence or representation?
I think first is to understand that you can still be immersed in the work of social justice and be politically engaged. I think a lot of times people look at it as an either or. So it's either you're an activist and you're working on these social justice issues or you're part of the system. One of my things that I'm really adamant about is like we have to be able to continue to survive these systems. And for far too long, somebody else has decided what's best for us. With the recent election cycle that we were in, one of my messages that I was trying to give to folk in my circles was that like my ancestors were not given a choice of how federal policies or local policies impacted their lives. And they weren't ever given a choice of whether or not they could vote. And so for me, I vote for them in honor of them and all the Indigenous women that helped us get citizenship in the first place. In all that advocacy to honor them and also to help have a voice in that process, because whether or not we like systematic oppression or the systems that created it, we live in them and we have to be able to continue on. There's a lot of strategies that have happened in the past, and right now one of the strategies that we need to be okay with is being politically engaged. So seeing ourselves as capable of being in these positions and knowing we're bringing our knowledge systems, we're bringing our teachings with us, and we don't have to compromise who we are in those positions. And so what can people be engaged with? There's local engagement, there's state engagement and local, like city council, school boards. There's all kinds of ways to be engaged locally. There's ways to be engaged with the state, and there's ways to be engaged beyond. I think that just making sure we see ourselves as part of, as that we are, we can't, we do have a place in these systems to create change.
Great, thank you. Dr. Hannity.
Yeah, I think it's really important that our communities understand that many of the changes that need to be made, society and culture, is really about engagement. There's no reason in my mind, and yet politically, I've seen this happen way too often, where if something is important to my community, or something's important to the indigenous community, or to the Latinx community, I have no idea why we don't come together and work together to educate each other on what the issues are. Again, my brothers and sisters of the Muslim community, the same, because I believe that if it's important to you, then it's important to me. And it's important that each one of us remember that as long as we are working in silos, that our strength is only so strong, but that we are working together across silos, across culture, across political lines, we can make even greater change. And so I would challenge all of us to understand the importance of climate and land and the importance of economic development and education and all of the things and topics that we've hit here today. And where we don't understand it, go get an understanding or pull people like Dr. Whitebear or Dr. Saeed and say, I don't get this, I need your help, so that we can really begin to understand better. What happens in my community? There's an awful lot of legislation, awful lot of things where people have trotted out, see what we did for the Black community. I've heard that even at the national level. And I'm thinking, all you can think of us is getting us out of prison early, because quite frankly, we need more than that. We need to be able to have people focus on the racial disparities that are in education, economic development, housing, all of those things. And again, coalitions matter. And I think the strength of coalitions really helps, and it really educates everybody who's involved.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Pastor Hennessy and Dr. Webner. You know, today in 2020, you know, we had over 157 American Muslims run for an office. 157. 67 of them, 67 of them won, you know, offices in different capacities, even though, you know, the negative rhetorics against them was very harsh and very demeaning, and intentional destruction, and millions of dollars were pumped in certain, you know, districts, you know, for this American Muslim to lose elections, but they won. So I think it's possible that we claim tomorrow, if we plan today. Well, today who'd ever think? Today we have a great DA in Washington County, Kevin Barton. He listens, he respects, he will humble himself, you know, and try to integrate, you know. You know, we didn't reach that 100%, you know, but at least we have achieved 70% of positiveness today. You know, we hope that our new president, Joe Biden, will be a healer and unifier and stop the wars all over the world.
Amen. Well, I'll tell you, I see hopefulness in the work that I do in the community advocacy with the immigrant and people of color. One is this election we just had, a woman of color for the first time as a vice president, and a president who dares to evoke that and acknowledge that we have systemic racism. So I'm very hopeful, Dr. Saeed, that we're going to have a new beginning. Let's hope that that comes to be. Let's give the next question to Dr. Hennessy. What does affordable housing look like among marginalized communities of color in our metro area?
Yeah, the issue of affordable housing is a really difficult one. I think that going back to what Dr. Whitebear was talking about when it comes to policy, one of the things that I would do if I could do all of the work we've done on affordable housing better, and understand that even for 6 years up to 3 years ago, I led an affordable housing structure here in Portland, right here in near Northeast. We may have provided shelter, and that's important, but we've not developed something that is sustainable. Because if that person loses their job, or if that person can no longer pay, or if that person's Section 8 certificate doesn't work anymore, or they have a major calamity, they're out on the street again. And what I'd like to figure out is, how can the process of affordable housing be that? Because the construction owner's gonna make some money. The apartment manager is going to make some money. Others are going to make some money. But the people who live in the affordable housing structure, they're not going to make anything. They cannot write anything off on taxes. They cannot. And so I say all of that to say, this public housing is not a rental unit. This is yours. This is what you own. And I would say to them, when we come around and do inspections, I don't want you to not care that there's dirt on the ground, or there's, you know, missing paint in the window or anything like that. I want you to care about that. And I want you to let us know about it, because we want to restore you. And so I believe that it's important for us to have the conversation around affordable housing, but also have it around home ownership, the ability to create wealth and prosperity for those, you know, at the bottom, if you will, and have them really have the opportunity to rise over time and really see their station in life change. And those would be my thoughts right now, without trying to be too verbose.
Great, thank you. Dr. Saeed?
You know, just empowering, you know, the marginalized communities through creating wealth and give them a chance, you know, to become entrepreneurs is a key factor, you know, to empower the community. So I agree everything in what Pastor Hennessy has said.
That was great. Dr. Whitebear.
Yeah, this is an interesting question for me to answer, because, like, I talk about houselessness a lot with my kids, and the growing houselessness here in Corvallis, and also knowing some of the implementations that happen in cities to, like, force people to not be able to find shelter under places like bridges or in front of stores and stuff like that. And one of the things we often talk about is how those are rooted in people not wanting them to stay for free somewhere, and how dare they stay somewhere for free and create this little camp, because that's all they have. They may not be able to afford the housing with all the rising housing costs. And so and oftentimes it's not a choice for people to be sleeping in a tent, and it's in the 20s out, like, or not even with a tent. And so a lot of times we're talking about those complexities. But I think all the things that Dr. Hennessy said, from like a standpoint of like a management point and like economic point, is like super spot on. I like to challenge people to like think beyond, like, is it really helping people have a higher income? Is that the goal? Or is the goal to like help control the cost of housing? Like, which one is the goal? Is it both, right? And one of the things I have a lot of interesting combos with my children, as if you know me, you would find out fast. But one of the other things that we talk about is how abstract even the economy is, and how we place this value on things. And people are deciding that. It's not like this magic thing that came from the universe or anything like that. It's something that we constructed as people, that what money is and what the economy is and how things are valued. And it's fascinating to think of how value is placed on things. And again, it goes back to that labor piece I was talking about earlier, and who's valued, whose labor is valued.
Absolutely. I know that in the Latino community, or any community of color for that matter, the standard model for affordable housing is a two-bedroom apartment, and that's just not what we need. We need three and four bedrooms, first of all, Second of all, I agree with Dr. Hennessy. We need to be looking at a sliding fee scale in regards to it addressing the whole issue of affordable as the first part of the conversation, no doubt about it. Let's go to our last question, and that is, let's start with Dr. Saeed this time. How do you see race impacting the quality of the access of healthcare in Washington County and in our state?
Again, you know, while you were talking, you know, I was thinking about Michael Moore movie Psycho, you know. One of my great friends, you know, the sisters, you know, of Providence, you know, she, one of them told me one time, you know, was the, we used to claim our service, you know, we used to claim our St. Vincent, and until, you know, everything become incorporated, you know, now these corporations are controlling us and controlling our mission and controlling everything that we do. And they give us peanuts, you know, for our buildings and our names that they use, you know. So I think, you know, until we human beings reclaim our humanity, rethink our role in our society, the rich before the poor, you know, the foundations, you know, before the recipients, you know. Today, we want, you know, to design programs that intentionally we want to heal and unify. You know, foundations has billions and billions of dollars that they accumulated in years, you know. But what they give communities is peanuts. One of the great, you know, programs in Chicago is called Iman, Inter-Muslim Action Network, Iman, I-M-A-N. Dr. Nashashibi, you know, he is a Palestinian, grew up in Jordan, and then he came to the U.S. to do his graduate school in Chicago, and he created this organization. And he said the challenges of the poor is the same challenge in every single corner, you know, of the world. But it is shame on us as Americans, with all the resources, we have these challenges. It is shame on us, for those of us that claim that America is the land of freedom and the land of the courageous, you know, that we still have this struggle in our public square. Today, yesterday, Barry, a homeless that I have known for 25 years, he comes here from time to time. You know, Barry, the guy with the bike, now he has no bike, they stole his bike. You know, he struggled every day. He struggled every day, and we calm him down, we give him money, we find him a shelter, we put him into the hotel for a few days, and then he gets back again, you know, to, and so many other single mothers, you know, in the Latino community, in the African community, in the refugee community. So it is very important for us, you know, to have many Virginia Garcias, you know, where everybody equally have access to health. We need to have better schools, you know, for our children, where everybody has access to proper education. America can possibly become the healer and the unifier of the world. But unfortunately, we become the bulliest of the world, you know, and we put our nose in everybody's business, and we interrupt societies, and then we wonder why they're here, you know?
Yeah.
You know, Somalis, yeah, they'll be happy to be in Somalia, you know? Afghans, they'll be happy to be in Afghanistan, you know, if you leave them alone. So unfortunately, this is what happened, you know. This is what happened, and, you know, it's really connected to each other, health, to education, to poverty, to many other aspects of our life.
Dr. Hennessy.
Well, first of all, I'm going to say it's been great to be on your program with you, and great to be with these two great scholars as well. And I want to thank you for every question that you ask is at least a half an hour to an hour sermon. Answer in 2 or 3 minutes. So let me just add on to what my friend Wajdi has said. I absolutely believe that one of another one of the issues on our list is the issue of healthcare. But it's about access, but it's also about expense. Access is huge because people who are poor, people who really culturally, quite frankly, as we know, who may be Black, Brown, or Indigenous, end up you know, from a genetic standpoint, dealing with issues that somebody of our white European brother or sister may not. But the issues regarding high blood pressure, of you know, vascular disease, and all those kind of things are a part of who we are. Our jobs, for most of us, are how we have healthcare. If we don't have that job, then many people don't have healthcare. If we, what one thing the Affordable Care Act did was to provide opportunity to recognize pre-existing conditions. And yet, what we've got is a movement afoot right now. To be interesting to see how the Supreme Court deals with this. But that pre-existing condition issue, which really bothered many insurance companies because they're in business to make money, and we all understand that. But they were also in their claims department teaching people how to say no or to limit, when you look at what you have as healthcare, how much still has to be out of pocket, excuse me, as it relates to your deductible before you have any sort of major thing. So I really, on the one hand, say access is a problem, cost is a problem, and then we really need to develop and grow our children right from the beginning to really have an affinity and a passion about eating healthy and about staying away from sedentary activities, to really focus on the importance of exercise and the importance of nutrition from a standpoint of what is really good for our body versus what isn't. And then finally, I believe that, and I'm just a believer of this, that all of our answers are not in pharmaceuticals and things of that nature. I still believe that there is a place for naturopathic medicine to really help us live our lives better, but yet insurance companies, many of the health insurance companies, only give you a limited access that they will pay for naturopathic assistance.
Dr. Whitebear.
Yeah, just building right off that, that's partially how I decided who my insurance carrier was there, how much they were willing to pay for what they call alternative medicine, instead of looking at it as like, those were their original medicines for the most part, right? And then the pharmaceutical was second that came after. And yeah, it does play a huge role in helping people heal and quality of life, but there are some things that perhaps can be introduced first or earlier in life to help with some things. And just, yeah, thinking about the role of food, when the first thing that popped in my mind for Indigenous communities was the ways that diets have been impacted by food deserts and by like either in poorer communities, lower income communities, or by being on a reservation far from food and like what that looks like. I just seen one of my really close friends that's trying to help bring back like traditional birthing practices in her community, where she was like, what would it take to put a natural foods place on our reservation? And it's huge, and they don't have one. A lot of communities are relying on the USDA government food, and some of that has to do with treaty negotiations. People need to know that it's part of what was offered in exchange for land is healthcare, education, and in some instances, food. So thinking about the Indian Health Services clinics in tribal communities, how oftentimes they're under-resourced and people are underpaid as medical teams there. And so they don't stay long because they get the experience and they go somewhere where they're paid more. So like, how do we better pay them so they want to stay there in those communities and continue to provide quality care? So I think about those types of things that are being faced in Indigenous communities, both in urban and in reservation settings, where for some folk they have to travel really far for food or for health services, and also how oftentimes traditional healing practices are not welcome in hospital settings. So like if somebody wanted to do smudge themselves off or do a small ceremony in the hospital room, that's discouraged or not allowed, and how there's that direct correlation with our belief systems and whether or not the medicine is going to work or if the procedure is going to work too. If you're not infusing both of those, I think that that people are less likely to either access the healthcare in the first place or for it to be as successful as it could have been. And I think about places like the Warm Springs Reservation, which is not that far away from where you all are, and their water crisis right now that's been going on for quite some time, and how, especially with COVID going on, how important it is to have access to water to wash your hands. And for some families, they don't have that, and how they are, how many miles, like they think they're about 20 minutes away from Madras, and how their hospital is kind of a little bit overtaxed right now. I know there's several people that have passed so far from COVID from not being able to access healthcare. And so I think it's just a reality that's being faced in so many communities, that thinking about the, also some of the awesome things that are happening too. I think sometimes we focus on the, it's horrible because it is, but there's also some great programs starting, especially in tribal communities, with bringing back traditional foods and the role they play in helping address like diabetes and heart disease and some other, and obesity and some other things. And also, like I mentioned, like birthing practices. But I would say, because of the way that indigenous communities are situated, either in cities and being like in those lower resourced areas, or being remote away from and really far away from access to healthcare, that those are like our life or death situations for a lot of folk. And unfortunately, the death side is what we hear about more than the life part as far as getting access. So,
yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Access is clearly one of them. The other one is culture, our food, our nutrition. As it relates to COVID, I want to mention, in the Latino community, we have been hit really hard. We probably represent 13 to 14% of the state population, while 40, 45% of the COVID cases are in the Latino community. In our county here, we represent, same thing, 13 to 14% of the population, and yet 64% of the COVID cases are in the Latino community. I imagine some of your communities are in the same way. We do have disparities just in the COVID, let alone in the cultural differences. That concludes our six questions. The other two, or the last comment, is more for Dr. Saeed and Dr. Hennessy. And that has to do with the work that is going on in regards to building bridges. Before we go, Dr. Saeed, can you tell us a little bit about building bridges?
Oh, yeah. So the building bridges is an attempt, you know, of the Muslim Education Trust with other community partners, mostly the Washington County DA office and the sheriff office, you know, and then the U.S. attorney and other community-based organization like, you know, Ecumenical Ministries of Oregon, the Muslim Community Center, you know, and the First Vancouver Baptist Church. So we brought a coalition of 25 people, you know, to celebrate and to heal our law enforcement, you know, and have a transparent conversation where we are able, you know, to resolve issues and challenges with our law enforcement, you know, at the local, you know, level, the county level and the city level, as well as, you know, the state level and the federal level. So our U.S. Attorney, Billy Williams, you know, he supports this work, and he's heavily invested time and effort, you know. You know, I can say that Billy Williams is one of the best ever U.S. attorney that came to us, you know, in my 34 years here in Portland, Oregon. So, you know, he struggled to surrender to the best of healing and unifying our public square. And today we have an honest and a very sincere conversation with the, our county sheriff. Garrett, you know, is open, you know, for solutions. He's open for listening. He's open to discussion. Our new elect, you know, DA, you know, of Washington County, Kevin Barton, is open, and he's more open than before, than the predecessor, you know, of him. And then also Mike Smith and Rod Underhill and so many other, you know, sheriffs, you know, like Mike Reese, you know, from Multnomah County and so on. So it's a conversation, it's a public conversation once a year. We have, you know, to come together here at the Trust, you know, to be able to speak our mind and be respectful of each other and try to find ways, you know, to heal and unify ourselves.
Great. Thank you so much. And just in closing, I want to thank both of you and Dr. Hennessy as well for taking time out to join us and voice our concerns regarding these seven topics with the Building Bridges, which I really appreciate. And with that, I turn it back over to you, Rob. Thank you very much.
Well, and thank you, Hector. Thank you so much to our guests. And boy, this is our first co-host, and I've certainly enjoyed it. Thank you so much for your work, Hector, in putting this together. What we've learned today is that systemic racism is real, and it's here in Washington County. Racism is just ugly, and it's something that takes away from the potential that a diverse population has to offer. We had a great conversation today. Once again, my thanks for that. But the conversations need to continue, not just among experts. They need to continue among disadvantaged populations and, frankly, among advantaged populations as well. If you have comments out there to our listeners, please get in touch with us through our website. And one more time, thank you to Hector. Thank you to our guests.
Thank you for listening to Inside Washington County with Rob Solomon. Go to our website, insidewashco.org, to contact us or leave comments on this interview. This series is produced by Rick Paulson.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.